Now, in regard to the testimony, I want to say a few comments before I go on with the testimony. And first of all, you'll notice that my testimony is not an autobiography. That's why it's called a testimony. It's not an autobiography. You will find a hard time to make a head or tail of my life story from the autobiography, because you'll notice that dates are not given. The whole idea is not to focus upon me or what I have done. If there's anything I've done, I don't think it's worth talking about. The whole purpose is to focus upon what God has done. So I don't mention any achievements of mine, if there are any such achievements. I don't want anyone to pay any attention to anything I did or am doing, and if the Lord permits, will continue to do. But only what God does in me and through me. And if you tell the story of one's life in this way, it cannot really be an autobiography. No attention is given to to places, to times. And if you read the Gospels, it's exactly the same thing. The Gospels are a headache to scholars, because the scholars want the biography. They want the historical details. They want the historical facts. Where, you know, what time did this happen, in what way? But the Gospel is not interested to tell us any of these things. It simply tells us what Jesus did. And so anyone who tries to reconstruct the Gospel's accounts on a historical basis will have a terrible headache, and they're going to have the same problem with my biography, my testimony, precisely because it is not meant to be a biography. Just exactly as the Gospels are not meant to be a biography of Jesus, but it is telling us what Jesus did or what God did through him. That is the first thing. It's not a biography. The second thing I want to make very clear is this. In my testimony, there are no exaggerations. None whatever. That is a principle by which I work. If I cannot recall a thing very accurately, I rather don't talk about it, because I might misrepresent the matter. So, there are no exaggerations. Some people thought, wow, these things are too amazing. Maybe they're being exaggerated. I assure you, and as the Lord is my witness, I have exaggerated nothing whatsoever. Because an exaggeration is, in a certain important sense, a lie. It is not true. You have made the thing bigger than what it really is. And that's a falsification. Now, you will notice again the same thing in the Gospels. There is no attempt at exaggeration. A very important thing is said just as though in passing. And Jesus saw the widow in the city of Nain, and she was walking along mourning the death of her only son. Jesus looked and had compassion, stopped the procession, and raised her son. You can't make an account shorter than that, undramatic as that. No padding. Anybody familiar with literature will say, well, you got to, you know, polish this up, make it look interesting, put in some more emotive words that work on the emotions, and people were crying, and they were all, but the preachers do that. What the Gospel doesn't do, the preacher does. He will tell you, you know, and all the people were crying and mourning, and all this went on, and Jesus moved, and they tried to make the story. Now, that may not be exaggeration, but notice, not even that is in there. And I often then try to just tell you what happened. I don't, you know, try to work on your feelings or emotions. But much less will you find exaggeration. As I said, that, in my view, is falsehood, falsification. So with this, let us proceed with the testimony, so that we don't have to spend all night here. you can be assured that all I'm trying to cover for today is not the whole of my life story. Otherwise, we might be here till tomorrow morning. But just the 10 years or so of my time in London, in England. Now, 10 years is pretty long. In that time, I can only select a number of things, and I have to leave out a lot of details, and just select a few things that I look to the Lord and ask the Lord, what exactly do you want me to say about what you did? And so, as I look to the Lord, I try to select a number of things which highlight what the Lord does in a dramatic way, but only in this sense. By dramatic, I don't mean it in the theatrical sense, but as being something unique. Whatever God does, raising the widow's son, said in one sentence, is dramatic. Whether we color it up or not, it is something exceedingly dramatic. It's something exceptional. You would say it's miraculous. And everything that God does is, in fact, miraculous. Because it is not natural, it is supernatural, and therefore astonishing. I aim to choose those instances for which there is no real human explanation. In other words, you can't think of maybe some psychological explanation, some other kind of to explain it away. I'm very sensitive to those accounts which could be explained by some other process, by some other means. So what I aim to do is select those accounts where it is difficult, if not utterly impossible, to find a human explanation for it. Now, these are some of the guidelines, but the other thing I would like to say also is what I am doing through giving my testimony is simply witnessing. Now, witnessing is something that every Christian can do, and every Christian should do. Now, you may or may not be able to preach. That doesn't matter. You can witness, and you must witness. So don't say to yourself, oh, he is the one who does all the witnessing. No, no. I'm just setting an example for you to follow. Because, I emphasize this point again, every Christian can witness and must witness. Why do I say that? Well, by simply this. What is a witness? A witness is somebody who has seen something or experienced something and tells you what he or she has seen or experienced. Now, if you are a true Christian, you must have experienced God in some way or other. How did you become a Christian if he didn't change your life? Now, if he changed your life, then you have experienced something. You experience being changed. And if you have been changed, then that is what you can witness to. You can say, now I was like this, and now the Lord has made me like this. I didn't suddenly change for some unknown reason. God did something in my life, and this is what I want to tell you about. A witness is somebody who has a first-hand experience. So therefore, if there is a court case, witnesses are called. Now, you can't, not just anyone can be a witness. The witness has to be somebody who has had first-hand knowledge of that particular case. Therefore, that person can witness. That means anyone who has had first-hand experience of God, and if your faith is second-hand, I don't know what kind of faith it is. Maybe you build your faith in somebody else's faith. You know, my friend believes, so I believe because he believed. That's second-hand faith. You know, he got baptized, so since he dived into the pool, so I dive in after him. That's second-hand faith. Second-hand baptism, maybe you like. And there are people who do that. And now, if you're second-hand, obviously you can't be a witness. But if you yourself have witnessed the Lord, you have experienced the Lord, then you can witness for him. So this point is very important. If every Christian were witnessing for him, this church would really be growing. I've often said, you only need to witness to one person a year, and you bring one person to church in 1 year. Just one person, 1 year. How many Sundays are there in the year? Over 52 or 53 Sundays, depending on the year, right? If in 52, 53 Sundays you can't bring one person to church in a year, what's with your Christianity? But if every church, every member in the church, brought one person to church, what happens to that church in 1 year? There would be 100% growth. The church would have doubled in 1 year. Did your church double this year 2000? Did it double in size? Yes? Probably not. Then somebody is not witnessing. Maybe most of you, most people in the church were not witnessing. If your witness counted for anything, maybe you witness and nobody wants to listen. Well, maybe the witness carries no punch, no quality, nothing in it. Nobody wants to listen to that. well, then you better take a look at, you know, a good look at your Christian life and say, something wrong with me. You know, what's happening here? Now, in the Bible, the Christian is called a saint. But it's very interesting to notice. And true Christians like to accept the title saint. You know, they're feeling above their head to see if there's a halo somewhere. And they don't seem to feel anything. And they look in the mirror, they don't see anything there either. So they consider themselves not qualified to be saints. And they probably are right in such cases. But I see here in the book of Revelation, chapter 14 and verse 12, where it says that the saints are the witnesses for Jesus. Witnesses for Jesus. In other words, if you are a true Christian, you are a witness for Jesus. Are you a witness for Jesus or not? So I don't just want to give you my testimony and you say, oh, this guy has a lot of unusual experiences. That's not very interesting. What is important is that I can motivate you to do the same thing as I'm doing. Now, you may not have known the Lord for quite so long. You may not have that many experiences to recount. What does it matter? If you have one experience to recount, keep recounting it until you have two experiences to recount. And when you've recounted, you know, got two experiences, you keep telling everybody about the two experiences until you got three. And then your story gets longer and longer. You'll have a lot of recounting to do. You'll have a lot to testify to the Lord about and bring glory to Him. But more importantly, this is what I'd like to share with you this Christmas evening. And that is that most Christians don't live very victoriously. And did you know that testifying for Jesus is a way to live victoriously? Did you realize that? Now you can see that, for example, in the book of Revelation, chapter 12 and verse 11. And they overcame. Overcame whom? Overcame the devil. Overcame the evil one. How? Through two things. One, the blood of Jesus. Two, their testimony for Jesus. Now, many people know about relying on the blood of Jesus, but that's not quite enough. There are two things. The other is witnessing for Jesus. They overcame the evil one by telling everybody about their experience of Jesus and the way Jesus has changed their lives. Now try that. Go out there and keep witnessing to the Lord. And somehow you're going to discover that you have victory. Maybe that's why the church is so full of defeated Christians. Why the church never grows? People don't witness for the Lord and then they are defeated. And they are wallowing in their defeat. Now, in a sense, preaching, you can say, is easy or difficult. Doesn't really matter which. I would say it's easy in that sense that preaching is a matter of repeating theory. You just talk what you have learned, all right? You know, there's something very strange in North America. I could hardly believe it once, and that was that I received some literature from a publisher that guaranteed that if I pay them a certain amount every month, they will provide me with a message to preach every Sunday. I couldn't believe this. Then I realized that must be thousands of pastors were receiving this kind of literature from this kind of publisher, and they were preaching messages that was, you know, written up by somebody else. So on Sunday, they just pick out their message that was sent to them through the post, and they preach that message. Now, America is an amazing place, isn't it? The other day, I looked at an advertisement in a magazine, which offered to offer me every kind of degree I like to have, just for a certain amount of money. You name it, you got it. No courses to attend. No courses to attend. You don't even have to go to that college. You don't have to do anything. All you got to do is tell them which degree you want. And believe it or not, that includes the PhD. No wonder in North America, you have lots of people with PhDs. When I first went to America from England, I wonder, this country must be full of learned people. How come so many people with PhDs? Until I discovered where their PhDs came from. Some books you can buy that you'll see use the title and then the author PhD. In North America, don't let that bother you, or don't let it impress you. Because he probably got it from one of these places. Because they will print your certificate for you. Oh, you get a genuine looking certificate with a college and date and everything with your doctor of philosophy. And because you have the certificate, you can actually print this in a book. You know, after your name, just put PhD there. If you're not satisfied with that, you just write back to them, give them another few hundred dollars and you get another doctorate, maybe DSC, a doctor of science or something, whatever. Doesn't matter if you don't know a thing about science. Any case, I said, preaching may mean nothing, but witnessing is everything. Because preaching, you preach from the head. When I preach from the heart. That's why it burns me out. It literally kills me. I pour my life out into it. I don't preach from the head. If anybody thought I preach intellectual messages, they haven't understood my preaching. I preach only from the heart, or I don't preach at all. That is how it drains your strength. If you can preach 5 messages and you don't feel tired, you've got a problem. You must be preaching from the wrong place, certainly not from the heart. And if you get this kind of message that comes out from the book publisher or whatever this place is that sends you one message per week, every Sunday message is guaranteed. It should be quite good, because I presume that whoever wrote that message has to work on it. He does the work, you just preach it. So I want to stress again. The question is not whether the message is good or not. The question is, preaching can be just theory, just knowledge. But witnessing has to be life. Unless you're telling lies, of course. I hope there are not people who tell lies for the glory of God. You have, as I stress again, to be talking about something you have truly experienced. If you haven't experienced, you can't witness it. But you can preach all the things you've never witnessed. You can talk about dying with Christ, rising with Christ. You can talk till your mouth is dry. But you have not experienced them. In other words, you don't have to experience these things in order to preach it. But you have to experience those things if you are going to be a true witness. So again, I want to encourage you to witness. You don't know how to preach, don't worry about it. But witness in order to be victorious in Christ. So let's come to the 10 years. And I'm going to work the camp theme in reverse. What do I mean? Well, you see this excellent design here. I think this is an excellent design on your camp book. Huh? Look at that. Can you understand it? Of course, because you never stop to think about it. In fact, it's totally impossible. How can feet being crucified be walking around afterwards? And we got to have to work the opposite. You can first walk and then get crucified, then that's it, finish. Once crucified, you expect to be walking again? In other words, the point is, the whole Christian life, if it is a genuine Christian life, is miraculous. It is a miracle. It is true. See, you see the nail prints in the feet. Even if the nail were extracted, shall we try it? We'll put a nail through your feet and see if you can walk afterwards. No way. Not when you can see these nail prints still dark like this. If they had healed as white scars, maybe, you know, after surgery, you might be able to walk. The whole Christian life. That's why when I testify to you and you think this is miraculous, don't worry about it. The whole Christian life is miraculous. If it's not miraculous, it isn't God who is working. When God works, it's a miracle, isn't it? By definition, a miracle. The Christian life begins with dying and ends up with life. That's the reverse of all that goes on in the world. Sometime I would like to tell you about crucifixion in detail. I can tell you, it will probably cause you to throw up. It isn't quite so nice, not so surgical. It is the worst kind of dying, not only in physical pain, but utter humiliation. And it is through this that God then raises us up into newness of life. But what I will do today, in order to drive home the point about dying, is I'll work it in reverse. And that means to say, I first will talk about my life in Christ, or Christ living in me. As we saw our sister Joy leading us in singing just now that song, Christ lives in me, I don't live anymore, he lives in me. And this is important for the testimony to understand that God works miracles only, I say this only, if he lives in us. He doesn't work miracles outside of us. He works miracles in us and through us, but not outside of us. And this is what worries me about so many Christians, is that they hardly ever experience anything that can properly be called miraculous or supernatural or God's work. And it worries me because I wonder, is God living in them? Is God living in you? Because when Jesus lives in you, almost everything you do, whatever you do, becomes miraculous. It's just amazing. In other words, he does not do amazing things to impress us or to impress other people. It is only when we are living his life, walking his path, living to serve him, the miracles just happen all the time. I experience them all the time, but I will just give you, as I said, examples of some outstanding things that he did. But I also like to show you that when he lives in us, the way we think becomes totally different. I think in earlier in testimony, in the book, you have noticed I mentioned that at one point I finally acquired a motorcycle. And this motorcycle, for those of you who know anything about motorcycles, it was a BSA, which is no longer in production, of course. A British motorcycle, 150cc, so fairly powerful, much heavier than most of those that we see on the streets here. I think they're mostly, what, 60, 70 or 80 cc's, is it? Are these about that kind of strength? So that one's 150cc, and I find that, finally I acquired this old motorcycle, and so for a poor man, a poor student who owned next to nothing, a motorcycle is a very valuable possession. My friend, who was at the same Bible Institute with me, was a graduate from Cambridge, but he was going to become a missionary in Japan. So before he went to Japan, he sold me his old motorcycle for 50 English pounds. Wow, for a poor student, 50 pounds is a lot of money, you know. I couldn't pay him at one time, so he agreed that I would pay him in installments. Whenever money became available, I just give him some, and it doesn't have to be fixed installments, maybe £5 one time, 12 pounds another time, whatever. I had the motorcycle for not very long, and one day I was staying in an apartment. I was sharing an apartment, by the way, with two Malaysians. One was studying architecture. He was from Ipoh, and the other one was studying electrical engineering, who was from KL, somewhere near KL, a brilliant scholarship student. And so we shared an apartment together, and one day it was an American Chinese brother from the United States, was called an American-born Chinese, ABC, American-born Chinese. He came to visit us, and so he was staying in my room with me. And we had some time of fellowship, and we said, okay, good night, we're going to bed. And we had hardly lain down for a few minutes when I heard a distinctive click sound. I knew that sound right away. It was my motorcycle stand coming up. I knew somebody was messing around with my motorcycle. Three floors down, I could hear it three floors up. I rushed to the window, jumped out of bed, rushed to the window, took a look, and I saw two fellows getting on my motorcycle, and the guy in front was trying to start it up, you know, kickstart the motorcycle. So I ran down the stairs, full speed, down the stairs. I think I shared this a little bit already previously. And I was just about to grab the neck of the guy at the back when the motorcycle started and zooming, it shot away, so it was gone. But the thing I want to emphasize with this, the total peace in my heart about the loss of the motorcycle. Now it was, you could say, I lost the only thing of any value to me. And of course, it affected my transportation. So I had to had to get to college and back and so on. I would have to go on underground and pay quite expensive fares. It was gone. But the beauty about Christ living in you is that the world means nothing. It doesn't matter. I did not even let it bother me for a moment. Okay, the bike was gone. I went upstairs, I went back to bed and fell asleep. And my American friend couldn't believe it. And he said to me next day, he says, "I don't understand you." I said, "Yes, did I do something wrong?" He said, "No, your motorcycle just got stolen. And you go back to bed and you just drop off to sleep." I said, "Well, so what was the problem?" He said, "What do you mean, what's the problem? You lost your motorcycle." I said, "Yes, I know that. So what was the problem?" He looked at me in complete disbelief. He seemed to be talking two different languages. So he shrugged his shoulders and thought, "This guy is impossible." And looking back, I thought, yeah, what's the human explanation? I said, humanly, I should have reacted differently. He expected me to act like a normal human being and be very upset that I lost my motorcycle. But he couldn't understand that it didn't bother me at all. Not because I had so much money I can walk out and buy another motorcycle. I couldn't. But that it didn't bother me in the least. How do you feel when things in the world don't go your way? And did you sit there and ask, "Lord, Lord, I am here living for you. I gave my life to you. You are living in me and you allow my motorcycle to be stolen." I mean, what kind of God are you? Surely you can protect my motorcycle, right? I mean, that's the way to reason. What do you want to believe in God when he can't do anything for you? He can't even protect your motorcycle. It didn't bother me. Because I knew that God has a reason. I didn't know what the reason was. It's good enough. If he gives, he can take it. Just as Job said, "The Lord gives and the Lord takes. Blessed be the name of the Lord." It's fine with me. He gave me the motorcycle, he took it away. But do we think like this? Our thinking has not changed. That's why we have nothing to witness. We have no impact. That is why my American friend, he looked at me in total disbelief. I don't have to talk. My life witnesses. He looks at it and he says, "I don't understand." You know, he mentioned this afterwards, long after that. Later on, he went and became a servant of the Lord himself. He went back to the United States and he went into the ministry, and he's a pastor today. Witnessing is not just a matter of talking. We can talk our mouths dry. It's a matter of the kind of life we live that when people look at it and say, this guy is extraordinary, unusual, maybe strange, but something unusual. Because of my motorcycle being stolen, it became the reason for another series of miracles that I will tell you in a moment. Of course, I had to do the normal thing. I had to go to the police next day and tell them that my motorcycle got stolen. Now, they told me the chance of finding a motorcycle in a city like London is close to zero. It's too big a city, and there are too many motorcycles around. I said, "Okay, that's all right, Lee. I'm just, just letting you know that the motorcycle was stolen." Well, a few days later, I got a call from the police and said, "Oh, we found your motorcycle. So you just come to the station and collect it, you see?" I said, "Okay, thanks." So I went there and I got the motorcycle back. But whoever was rough riding the motorcycle made sure that they did enough damage to it. That's how it is. You know, these rough guys, they just jump on it and do all kinds of things, maybe ride over the pavements and who knows doing what. So the brakes were defective. That was one thing, and there seemed to be a leak somewhere in the engine. We actually never could find where the leak in the engine was. But that became, you can say, a source of complaint. You can say, "Lord, you know, here I was just about to go on a mission to Ireland. I was going out to serve the Lord with another brother who also had a similar motorcycle. Now his motorcycle is in perfect condition, and mine, defective brakes." Now, defective brakes, when anyone riding a motorcycle knows, that's a deadly thing. If it doesn't brake properly, for one thing, it's going to skid whenever the road is wet. And And when a motorcycle skids, it's not like a car, you know, it's four wheels. When a motorcycle skids, you fly off the motorcycle and your life could be in danger. Now, I had arranged with my friend for the holidays that we are going to Ireland to evangelize. And much of my testimony about England, about the London days, is about witnessing. It was my constant joy and determination to witness for my Lord. And I was going to Ireland to evangelize there with this friend of mine. And now the motorcycle was defective.